Hey everyone, and welcome back. I notice you guys probably. Oh, let me do that again. Hold on, I had a bit.
You got it.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to Dying to Talk. You're probably wondering, damn, why does my voice sound way smoother? That's because I'm on a brand new microphone. Big shout out to Brother Mike and Sophia Kovach for hooking us up with a new podcast mic.
Squeaky chair.
It is a squeaky chair, but half the time I record the other episodes on like the recliner, yeah. And I'm always moving back and forth.
That thing's loud.
That fucker's loud. The rocking chair is surprisingly quiet.
I never noticed it in the recordings, though.
Mm-hmm. I'm a fucking wizard.
We're working on the audio.
Yeah.
By we, I mean you.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. It doesn't need to sound fucking perfect. I don't give a fuck.
Listen to early episodes of any podcast.
Exactly. So exactly. Got a very special guest. We're currently in downtown LA right now. I took a little bit of a trip to Los Angeles, California to visit Miles Jacob Goldstein.
Hello.
One of the members of Dying Industry Films, mm-hmm. Somebody I've mentioned a lot on the podcast, is here. Well, I'm here. I'm in LA. Dude, it's really nice out here.
Yeah, it's look at this weather. Can you get over it?
Pretty nice. Yeah. We're like right on the beach.
You said downtown.
I thought downtown.
They're far away.
Spoiler alert, we're not in
LA.
We're
in my bedroom in Newburgh.
Yeah, Miles came back.
Bedroom in my mom's house.
We're at Miles' mom's house. This is the first time we're recording an episode not in my normal place.
In the studio.
Mm-hmm. Not in the studio.
It's grandma's house.
Mm-hmm. Grandma's house. I'm very open about that it's grandma's house.
It's a great house.
It's.
I wish we were recording there because that's where we shot
the thing. Yeah. Well, I'll give you the key, and if you just feel nostalgic, you can walk around.
I want to see Gigi while I'm here.
She called me before we were recording and asked me.
I noticed it was her.
Yeah. She was like, did you get a new car? And I was like, no. She goes, the other day you were driving your mom's car. And I'm like, well, if it was my mom's car, Gigi, then it's not a new car. And
my
yes, I was.
My grandma also has trouble with connecting dots.
Huh?
My grandma has trouble with connecting dots.
No, I think Gigi, it's crazy because with Gigi especially, I love Gigi to death. She's like my favorite family member.
Same.
But she'll like have a thought randomly, or maybe she'll sit on it for like a week and go, hey, last week when you wore that blue shirt, where did you get it? It's never like in the moment. It's always like five business days later.
Gatekeep it.
How you doing, Miles? How's your week?
Good. My week, it's so weird being back. It's such small town vibes here.
Shut the fuck up, bro. Oh
my God. No, like, I don't mean that in like a, oh, coming from the big city. Just like, it's weird going around, like, being anywhere out there and being like, I know I'm not going to know a single person around me and I know they're not going to know me. And then being here and like literally seeing every person I know the first night I go out,
mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, here's everyone from high school and
every character.
Other high schools.
And what was that like for you?
Really nice as like a change of pace, mm-hmm. but I'm glad I'm not here permanently again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Especially this time of year because it's March. The weather is insane. It's
crazy how quick seasonal depression will like come back to haunt you.
Dude, I was like chilling a couple of days ago because it was so nice out. Now I'm back.
Yeah.
Today's been a bad day.
Yeah.
I had a fucking horrible day today.
What? You want to talk about that?
I don't want to talk too much about it just because.
Just get over it. Move on.
Yeah. I mean, fuck, dude. I mean, life. Things get fucking worse all the mm-hmm. time and then they get a slight bit better.
And
it's
you're
like
this is nice.
I said this to myself the other day. I was like, you know, I said this to myself after I picked up a burrito and I was driving to the office. New burrito spot over by Wingstop. It's pretty good. I was like, damn, like I'm so down right now. I can't wait to be like up again, but it's just like when I was like trying to think about it. I guess I don't have ups. I'm always up until I'm down and then I'm like, damn, when am I going to be up again? But I feel like...
But up is just not down.
Up is just not down, really. And, you know, financially right now, all-time low, and I'm totally okay with saying that. It sucks. But your mom said this to me the other day. She's like, you want to be an artist? You have to accept the fact that you will probably be broke.
Starving artist is
forever.
Like the persona.
But it's funny because I don't consider myself like...
Starving?
Well,
or an artist?
Definitely not starving, my fat ass. Or, yeah, an artist.
Carlo doesn't consider him... self an artist, and I had like a really great little part of a conversation with Carlo about that, and I'm like, you make art, you're an artist, and he was like, oh, the music, it's not, I don't consider it art, and I'm like,
yeah,
it's creation and it's coming from you, So it's kind of totally art. It's easier for me to call myself an artist than a filmmaker or a director or a writer, even though I've made films, directed, and written. I can only call myself an artist with confidence, which feels backwards.
Yeah. I don't have confidence with any title that I do. Like, people introduce me, because the people I'm working for now, they're like, oh, this is our videographer. I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess I am a videographer.
Yeah.
But I'm also the editor. And then I'm also
I think it's videographer, though.
Videographer?
You're throwing videographer in there.
Somewhere. Oh, okay. Videographer? Videographer? That sounds weird.
I think that's what I say. Videographer.
That does sound actually worse.
Extra worse, yeah.
Maybe they're doing that because maybe they say it wrong on purpose.
It's not a cinema otographer. Can I say something?
Yeah, sure.
I'm so excited to be here on this podcast because I'm a longtime listener and fan. But
been on it since episode one. Episode one?
Episode one.
Wow.
I've listened. The only one I haven't listened to so far has been the ones that aren't out yet, the one we're recording now, and the one that just recently came out with Sam. I'm in the middle of listening to that. But it's all been so great.
Gotcha. Yeah, we only have, at the time of this recording, it will be out, but we have one other guest between you and Sam, and that is Sophia with a PH, Spencer's sister.
When me and Spencer were living in LA, she visited us from San Diego, and we went to the Hollywood sign.
Yeah,
and I was wearing orange shoes, and we got pizza, maybe.
Anyway, opening segment. Let's get right into it. Whose pants are these? I didn't do it with last week's episode with Sam. Damn. I was just too excited to get right in.
Wait, no, didn't. Oh no, you didn't
do it. No,
you didn't.
Mm-mm.
I'm tight.
We'll make up for it, Miles. Yeah. Whose pants are these?
These pants are mine, obviously. Because I'm wearing them. They are Obey Deep Whale Corduroys.
Those are Obey pants.
Yeah, dude. So they're
sick.
They're a Hanukkah gift. Laugh. just Mike.
Miles is Jewish, everybody. Trigger warning.
Yes, both. I'm full Jewish. Franny Jewish. I don't know what else I am except Jewish and an artist. Jartist. But yeah, so they're Obey. They're green for the listeners, which is the only people who, the only way to absorb the podcast. Deep Whale, so the big corduroy. Obey pants, they were a Hanukkah gift from my aunt and uncle and cousins and cousins.
Your whole entire family chipped in to buy your pair of pants.
Yeah, no, and I think they got them for free, but they're like my favorite new pair of pants. They're my newest pair of pants, and they're now, and they're also since then my favorite pair of pants.
Mm-hmm. That's what's up.
Yeah.
I've actually decided to switch it up. This is a first time for me. I'm wearing black khakis from the Gap.
Yeah. I was like, this looks exactly like every pant I've ever seen you wear.
It's my default. Everybody always thinks, I've said this before, they think I have only one pair of pants. I bulk buy.
You have six pairs of pants. One pants.
I have six pair of black, six pair of khaki. I have triples of the Nova.
triples of the Barracuda.
I can't. You know what's crazy though? I'm like destined to never own olive khakis because every time I go to the pants store, the Gap, they never have them in my size in olive.
Yo, I'm about to go. I gotta go to the pants store.
Pants store. That's what I call it because I only buy pants there.
I don't know if they have other good stuff. Everything else says Gap on.
Gap's got no, but they got some good basics. Like you can get a good, like plain t-shirt for like $5, like a good they okay. Got a lot of good things to throw.
Target's like, really expensive
if you need like business stuff. Cash. Oh, Target's a joke with clothes. It's like, relax, it's Target.
Good fellow, more like broke fellow,
more like bruh, more like waiting at the self-checkout, hope nobody notices I'm buying a shirt because I have an event Sunday and I need this shirt.
That feels personal.
It is. And that concludes Whose Pants Are These. All right, Miles.
All right.
You've listened to the show. You already know what this is. You already know. We're going to have to put you through. We're treating you no different. You're the first company member that's made an appearance on the podcast other than myself. So don't fuck it up.
I'm trying no pressure. So hard right now.
Where are you from, Miles?
I'm born in LA and raised in Newburgh, New York. A stone's throw from the city, and now I'm living back in LA, but it's new. I was a baby. We moved on my second birthday was our first time sleeping in New York, so I don't remember that time living in LA, but it happened. I'm sure of it.
And where were you born? 02 or 01?
01. March 1st, 2001. So just barely made it to see 9/11.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's my first memory.
9/11?
No.
Nice. That's my nephew's first memory and only memory.
I've fabricated memories of me being alive on 9/11, though.
Just like Mark Wahlberg.
If he was there, things would have been different.
He would have stopped it. That's okay. So if you notice, guests, I always got a lot of people from Newburgh on the show. It's where I'm from. Why not? A lot of interesting people living in this interesting place. It is. And people need to appreciate it more. And then people that appreciate it too much need to calm the fuck down.
Yeah, relax. It's Newburgh.
Okay, calm down.
I'm glad we're on the same page with that.
And for those of you who don't know who Miles is, and he's going to tell you, but I'll just give a brief introduction. He is, what are you, the creative director?
Creative director. I feel like those are just words.
Those are just titles that we have for our website to look cool. He's one of the four founding members of Dying Industry Films. Myself, him, Spencer, and Michael are all members of the board. But we started Dying Industry Films together with Quinn, who I've mentioned before, during the pandemic.
And Robert
and Spencer and Carlo and Michael
pandemic. I mean, I guess Carlo is like always there, never wanted to like
half commits.
Yeah.
But he serves that role because if people see him commit, they're more inclined to commit.
Right. He's a soulmate for sure.
For sure. But yeah. So Miles, I know who you are as far as the artist in you. But for the audience, give us a little rundown. What got you into filmmaking? What got you into movies? What got you into the Criterion Collection?
This is tough. So, all right, let me think. I got into the... I don't think my brain works the way its brains are supposed to, one. I was into music well before I even ever considered film a thing, which is ironic because over the last like 7 months I've actually been making songs. This is something you don't know.
Wow.
But like I literally have like songs that are in my voice memos that I think I'm gonna make into just to get out of my like realm and stuff. Nice. I could stop thinking about them, but I guess my whole dad's side, majority of the dad's side of the family is our film people, and one of them kind of planted the idea of not going to college and doing film in my head instead of going to college, but to pursue music.
Mm-hmm.
And since then I like full personality change pivoted towards film and moved to LA with Spencer after high school to do that. Was around it, but didn't make any headway with creating things. COVID hits.
Yeah.
Come back here to Newburgh. Quarantine, bonfire. Talk about, you had some idea called Skatefellas, which is to date our most viewed thing. It's unless you put all of the Bro House views together. Is it still?
I checked recently. We're still averaging like a couple of views of Skatefellas like a week.
That's crazy. Weird.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
I'll take it. I'm not complaining. It. Everybody watch it. But
That. We made that. Mm-hmm. You did all the creative things and I shot and did other things. And you also produced it and I was kind of like, hey, Mike, every day I would just text you and be like, hey, are you producing it? And you'd be like, this is what we're doing. So you...
Yeah, brother, because I had all that unemployment money.
Yep, and had now you don't.
Sweet.
Sorry, you still have that sweet ride.
Yeah, sweet ride that some...
It's not worth it.
But no, so right out of high school, we met in high school, didn't really like each other at first. I didn't like you. I don't give a fuck.
For the audience, our friendship, which is I consider one of my most like valuable and like it, like you are one of my best friends and I care about you deeply, and our entire friendship came from this working relationship that mm-hmm. started with Skatefellas. So I have no other friendship. Well, I have Keegan. We were friends from working together, and now he's like my boy ski. But
shout out to Keegan.
He's in LA for one day, and I'm in New York, of course. The one day he's in LA,
and he's because he's in Atlanta, right?
He's in Atlanta. He was in Vegas working on a thing that I'm not signed an NDA for, but I was supposed to be on that. And there's a whole thing. They didn't like me, and then the strike. No one's working still.
Yeah, it's like 50-50. There's like possibly another strike on the way.
What, IATSE? Yeah, that's, don't even,
it's like,
no one wants to talk about it.
It's crazy because you're definitely my top 100 friends for sure.
Dude, I'm on.
I don't know where you place.
I don't even know if you know 100 people.
I know like 200 people. What I was going to say, it's interesting because, yeah, like, I mean, we knew each other from high school, doing a running theme with most of the guests I've had. Jesus, this chair. Do the shows together. You did Stage Crew, and then I guest starred on for JTT one fine show.
That was awesome. Weenie Hut Juniors.
Yep, Weenie Hut Juniors New Year's Eve.
I'd pay you $100.
Rocking the Burbs. Yo, yeah. So Miles wanted to smash you. This guitar like so bad because it was like, what was it?
It was a $100. It was a Ibanez $100 alto V.
It was like a shape.
No. It was a Strat. It was a white Strat.
It wasn't like
it was like a Strat shaped body.
Oh, okay.
I hated how it played and how it sounded and everything about it. So I was like, why not?
I'm going to smash this guitar.
It was a New Year's Eve show. Yeah. It was like a big moment. I didn't even get all the way through it. And yeah.
Smashed it. And everybody was like, why'd you do that?
No. It was 50-50. Dylan Brackett thought it was like the coolest thing.
Hell yeah.
And I love the Brackets. That those are like longtime family.
There's
friends.
One guy in particular that really didn't like it.
Yeah. And
we're not
going to
name
but
drop
he
him.
He sucks.
He's so, the worst.
Yeah. He said, I was like, it's a $100 guitar. Fucking relax. And he goes, I'd pay you $100 not to smash
that
guitar.
That was his way of saying, can I buy the guitar off you?
Yeah.
I don't want to play guitar.
You
want
to buy this broken guitar? I'll give it to you for $50.
You should have been like, yeah, give me the $100. Hands you the $100, and then you should have smashed it.
You smashed it,
right
it anyway. I wish I was more witty and an asshole.
Yeah, so you took an unconventional route of not going to college. It's not, to say unconventional is, I mean that because majority of people our age, especially in high school, are kind of put in that box.
All
like,
of my friends went
to college
except for Spencer.
Yeah,
who I moved
and business wise, only me and Michael went to college, and only one of us is making a great salary and a full time job with benefits.
Yeah.
The other one has a podcast. So you fucking tell me if college is right for you. Let me know in the comment section below. But yeah, you guys went out there. Pandemic. What was your time? You did have a job out there in LA, right?
Yes.
You were. What were you doing out there the
so
first time?
It was awesome. I was. So I was living with my grandma, and then eventually me and Spencer got a place in East Hollywood. I was working as a driver and vault tech, so like worked in shipping and receiving for a post-production house in Studio City. So I would like fill a van with either hard drives or film reels because they dealt with a lot of physical media, and then like drive to different like studios and different post houses, so like Photochem and Deluxe, and then like Warner Brothers and Fox and stuff, and hang out on the lot and super stoned. It was so much fun. It was a great way because LA is such like a big city, like a sprawling metropolis that like it was a great way to like get to know how the roads work and where things will take you.
Gotcha. And so you were doing that. You guys left.
That was all I did.
You guys left in 2019.
No, we left in 2020. We
it
left
was 2020? It was the winter.
It was April or May.
Oh.
You're just getting it wrong.
No, I remember it was like cold as fuck at the goodbye party.
So I wasn't there. I moved out to LA in the beginning of October
of
2019.
But didn't we have two? We had one at Spencer's house.
One was
you
me.
Weren't there.
One was mine.
Yeah.
Mine was first because I moved first. And then he moved in like February or January or February,
yeah.
Spencer moved out to LA.
I think I was referencing that. I think I was referencing
yeah,
that.
Because I was there.
Because you were already in LA.
Mm-hmm.
This fucking chair.
Yeah, the chair is bad.
I like this chair until it's time to
it's
record
a good
a podcast
chair
on it.
For a sitting.
So, what was it like for you? Your goal was to move out to LA and work in film. get involved in the entertainment industry, what was it like for you when the pandemic happened and you realized that that dream might fall apart or have to be on hold for a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, the pandemic for me, like everyone, was like a big punch in the dick. Like, what is life going to be for the next? I mean, we thought a few weeks, maybe months, and it ended up being several years. I ended up working.
Well, because L.A. was like really shut down for a long time.
So L.A., actually, I'll give this kind of story of like how we ended up leaving. Like, COVID was happening. I was wearing gloves at work and no mask. It was like that era, like first happening. New York got hit really hard. Before LA, New York was like the epicenter of COVID of the world, and I was on my break in the parking lot on my phone one day at that job that I was talking about, and I saw a video on, like, I feel like it was like, what's the account, like World Star, like it was on World Star, and it was just like 150 fucking military tanks on a train rolling through downtown LA. And that, at that moment, I was just like, things are gonna get bad. I want to go home. I want to get out of here. And I told my parents, and I told Spencer, and then I told my boss, and he was like, you want to leave here to go back to New York for COVID? And I was like, yeah, or like, I want to be with family and just kind of ride it out. And then I turned out being totally right.
Yeah.
In my decision.
New York ended up reopening a little bit quicker than LA did.
Yeah, I think so. And well,
that's crazy. That was already almost four years ago.
Yeah, I know. That's
next week. It will be 4 years since the pandemic. March 12th, yes. I think, was like the official.
Yeah,
March 14th. It was.
I
like
saw
in the
a Crew Stories post that was like it happened like now.
Yeah. Well,
like 4 years ago.
I remember being in Albany at the time, and this is something I've mentioned on other podcasts. But around this time, 4 years ago, me and my friends in college were watching like videos in China of what was going on.
Oh, that was gnarly.
My one friend, Wuhan. Eric, was like, sir, he said, it's going to happen here, bro. It's going to happen here. We were like, nah, no way. And then I remember when we got that email the next day and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Because somebody had it in the school.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. We all were like freaking early the fuck days. Out. And you know, it's crazy. Everybody in the school had the same idea. They're like, yo, spend your meal money because we're not coming back after spring break. Because we had one day
college
before
kids,
spring break.
Bro.
We had one day before spring break, and that day there was like no classes, go home early. Took my ass to the food hall and
it was crazy? Like Black Friday over
it,
there.
It really was. I came back because I drove home that same day. I was like, I'm going the fuck home. I had the same, and I only had like a 2 hour drive. And
in
I
your
just,
blue car?
No, I had the black one at this point.
Oh.
Actually, no. It will be, yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
It's a 2020.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
This was in 2020.
Right.
I bought my new car, the car that I have now,
mm-hmm.
I think 4 years ago today, I think.
Wow.
I think it was 4 years
ago
today.
And you just picked it up today.
And I just picked it up today from its mom. We have joint custody together. It was in the body shop.
It was a nasty divorce.
I had to get a new headlight assembly put on. Anyway, I spent like $600 out of my meal money. Didn't even put a dent. Because again, your meal money is for the whole semester, so it's like a couple of thousand. But I came home with like two egg crates filled with snacks. And I was like, this is going to, because I'm not going to be able to go to the grocery store because everything's going to be shut down. And
little did you know, you should have spent the rest on toilet paper.
Yeah. I'm more of a baby wipe guy.
Fiends America.
I'm more of a baby wipe guy. Yeah, no, shit was fucking crazy. And then I just remember thinking about you guys being out there, and then it was just like, hey, come over, we're having a bonfire.
Oh yeah, we came back and we did not tell a soul. We told I think literally just Addison and Michael separately, and that was it.
You guys drove all the way back to New York.
Yeah, so when we both moved out there separately, but like to be together, which sounded so gay, we both drove and I shipped my car. And then, COVID hit, and, like, I quit. The day I wanted to leave was a Friday. I quit on that Friday, and then I think we drove back that Monday. We, like, packed up the apartment and stayed with family and drove back. We did it in 3 days, two nights. Mm-hmm. We slept in New Mexico and St. Louis, Missouri, and fucking booked it across the country.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
And back to New York you came, and then kind of like I've said before on this show, but for us, Blessing in disguise, kind of, because it brought us together.
100%.
Brought us together, and we ended up here with a business with... You went back to L.A.
I'm back in L.A.
2023. With a feature.
Dude.
Multiple other projects on your belt. Like, you have way more.
I would... There's no way that I would have accomplished what I've accomplished here in L.A. So, basically, I ended up where I started, but with so much to show for... the time I've spent and work I've done. Like, it was YouTube videos, and then Skatefellas was like, I always say it was like jumping into the deep end to learn how to swim, with as far as like filmmaking goes, which was like huge, super blessing. We did some short films. We started doing client. We did Bro House. We made an LLC, started client work.
Mm-hmm.
We on the search to shoot a feature together, like all of us.
Yeah.
I either by myself or with you ended up writing three feature films and what shooting was the third one. Well, I made the one about the girl.
Oh, right. And then we made the one together. Talking about that one last night with somebody.
Find Her, that one?
Yeah. No, the one that we wrote together. Which didn't even have a title. But, yeah.
Wingstop.
Yeah, we'll talk more about... Yeah, we did call it Wingstop. We'll talk more about modern LA now, but while your time back was... Because your goal was always to go back to LA, correct?
Yeah, well, actually, right after coming back, I was like, maybe Vancouver is where it's at, because they have, like, a big indie scene.
Canada?
Canada. Okay. Yeah, west coast of Canada.
Yeah. LA. The LA of
LA's
Canada.
LA is Montreal. Yeah, yeah. Kind of. But, yeah, and then fucking that becomes a war zone. So, like, crazy. I got that wrong. Yeah. It was kind of like, you're there. LA has this weird, like, hold on people where, like, I've seen it happen again and again where, like, you go, you enjoy your time there, or you don't. You leave. And then either weeks or months later, you're like, oh, no, that's a special place. And it is. And so, like, you know, the first time me and Spencer moved there, like, he was like, man, like, I had such a bad time. And then a few months go by and he's like, man, I'm really starting to miss L.A.
Yeah, especially because you go from one of the most warm and fun cities in America. I mean, every city has its bad things, but I'm not gonna say I'm well aware warm that LA is horrible
to describe it.
And then you're stuck back home, because for anybody to move back home after trying a thing or trying something new, regardless of the circumstance, there is like a damn,
there was an aspect of failure.
Yeah, even though it's not your fault,
and disappointment
for sure. So navigating through that too, because like I've said before on this podcast, the time people spent, for those who were lucky enough to survive and are still living healthy from the pandemic, I know we lost a lot of people during the pandemic, how they chose to use all that time has affected them, I would say, to present day for sure.
People have either like gained lifelong skills, lessons, and experiences, or been on their phones or playing video games through the entire like 3-4 year experience.
I had a good mix. I was like playing a lot of video games, and I was working Warzone out a lot. Hard. I was skating a lot, but then at a certain point,
I was skating for a little.
I was getting so bored. I was like, there needs to be something else. And I just remember, like, I'm a very like sociable dude. I like making people laugh, and I like just, you know, I'm a bit of an attention whore, but not really.
You're really funny.
It comes in strides. Like, I like, if there's a crowd, I like to entertain. I won't I won't feel the need to entertain all the time, but it's like, somebody is making these people laugh. I just remember like, oh man, I don't have that social, like, I laugh in the game chat and party chat. So that's when I started making all those TikToks and like sending them everywhere. Like, hey, do you think this is funny? Just to like, I did it from a place of, like, just in case any of my friends are potentially going to end their own life because they can't handle the situation that all of us are in. That's where it came from, because I'm, like, not hearing from certain people. I'm like, I hope everybody's okay. Well, at the very least, let me send them this funny video of me. So that's kind of how I got started with, like, content creating. But then I quickly was, like, I had one TikTok that blew up in a negative way, and I got scared off the app. I was like, I don't want this kind of lifestyle.
Happened for the best.
And then I was watching all these movies, and then I was like teaching myself how to write. And then it was just, like, it was like just so interesting how, you know, you moved back to LA, you and Spencer moved back to LA, didn't expect anything other than like, crap, we're back home. I came home and I was like, great, no more college. But I was like, okay, but now what? And life is a game of improv, and in improv it's yes. Wow. And so when life goes, hey, you're moving back home because of the pandemic, you have to be like, okay, yes. And what now?
Yeah. Not, and no. You said, me and my uncle have been writing this script basically as a joke. And yeah. I said, can we shoot
it? And
it
was
please?
Solid.
I said, can we shoot it, please? And it ended up being a lesson, a masterclass in filmmaking through failure, and a way to spend a bunch of time with a bunch of friends. And I made a lot of new friends and reconnected with old friends. But also,
that's the most important part, the whole
oh,
thing.
Yeah. And that's the reason there are views on it, is because of all the people that were involved.
Mm-hmm. And again, like, what we did is not unique. No. It's special to us and only us, and I'm not
unique,
we're
not
sitting
special.
Here. Yeah.
It's unique, but it's not special.
I don't mean like unique, like I'm sure a lot of people
unique experiences.
There's a unique experience for us.
Yes, but not to be unique to choose this path.
Yeah. It's not. But no. For us especially, because we were always like directly adjacent in the music group scene, where like we would start a music project, it would fail, it would get off the ground. Mm-hmm. So for me, I was just like, okay.
I had like 9 in high school.
Huh?
I had like 9 different music
I was in
groups
like,
in high school.
Well, not like really in bands, but like there was always somebody trying to do something together, and it just would always fall apart. So when the same
like
group of
people
exactly, the same group of people were like all in Spencer's backyard, I was like, we're doing this and we are finishing it. That was like the biggest thing, because I wanted to prove something to myself, and I'm sure everybody involved on Skate Fellas
did.
You
were determined, me and you. Like,
absolutely. Hours. Yeah. Hours upon hours.
Days.
Now it's funny, because if we were to redo Skate Fellas, it would take us like a week and we'd have it out by like the following week.
Well, I always have this like thing of, anytime you finish a project, if you could start it that day with everything that you learned, it would obviously be better, but it wouldn't be the same.
No.
And like, I don't know, the relationship that you have with creation, and like the conversation of trying things and failing and growing, are like, that's what it's all about. And it's like, you gotta like poop things out, and you gotta get them out of your body and system so that you can move on to the next thing and just do it all over again until you die.
Yeah.
Much like just being a person, just shit and die, shit and eat and eat and then shit.
And that does
die.
Sound scary at first when you really think about it. It's like, I don't know. But then you realize, like, oh yeah, how many things have I done and moved on to the next thing? That's just kind of
it's still pretty scary.
Game of life. And, you know, what I find funny is that everybody's doing it in some capacity, whether they realize it or not. And whether or not it's from an artistic background, like trying projects and failing or whatever, it could literally be anything. The trying, fail, like, you try something, it's a success, it's a failure. New information is received based on the result of what you tried.
Usually it's in between,
move
too.
On. And sometimes it's like a neutral thing. And that applies to everybody, everything, everywhere, all at once.
I don't know if neutrality exists in art, but there's still, you can be in between success and failure without being neutral. And that's what I think everything is.
Yeah, that's very well said. So while you were in New York after Skate Fellas and then iNat, you got to shoot your first short film, two short films back to back.
Yeah, one was for school.
One was for school.
Technically
one was an experimental horror short.
Some really fun stuff.
We watched it the other day. And we were just like kind of laughing. We were just like, yo, what the fuck were we what the fuck
were
we thinking?
That's experimental.
Yeah. Even with Skate Fellas, I watched back, I'm like, ugh.
Skate Fellas was the real experimental horror.
Yeah, it really fucking was. But you worked on, what was the Mark Ruffalo thing you had worked on?
Oh, yeah. So actually that was
before?
Here. That was in like Hyde Park.
Was that before
that
pandemic?
Was before LA.
Oh, okay.
That was the
okay.
first I worked on. A YouTube Nick Jr. thing in the city at like Times Square, at the Viacom building, peddling merch to children. Crazy.
Trying to solicit children.
I busted
children.
My skull open, actually.
Trying to sell what? Like
to sell toys and stuff. It was called What's in My Backpack, and it was like What's in My Bag, like Amoeba's What's in My Bag, but like for a kid selling toys to kids on YouTube, and I made like $800 in 2 days. and I was like, I'm rich.
Or you're a PA?
I was a PA. And then I was also a PA for 2 days on the Mark Ruffalo. I know this much is true. The HBO / Hulu.
This is a green set, guys.
It's really cool. They were shooting on film, I think. They checked the gate. I don't know if they were shooting on
film. They were checking a gate for
sure.
There
was a gate being checked. And that's a film
I always love on set. That I'm like checking the gatekeep. Gate. Yeah, they check the gate and somebody goes, it's digital. It's like, bro, we know what they mean. Shut the fuck up.
It does mean check the gate is to make sure that there isn't like dust on the lens element. The gate is basically the aspect ratio of the film celluloid. So like a hair stuck on the gate is like not the same as a piece of dust like showing up on a single frame of film. That happens. You see it all the time on anything with film, but this is like just stays there. It's like in the corner wiggling and it doesn't go away. So that's what checking the gate is. But for digital, it's similar in that you have the digital sensor and it's making sure there's no fucking dust on the sensor, I think, or the lens. You don't want dust anywhere, but it's going to be there.
It'll be there.
You're alive.
Yeah. Dust is everywhere.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then, because you were picking up like, or at least attempting to pick up like other work while we were doing. Because at this point in time, Dying Industry Films was solely existing for our own original content. But then we all kind of had the realization that we're not going to make money that way.
Yeah.
So we had to start opening
it up.
Took
us way too long.
But also too, it took us a while to get kind of like how things were working. And even now, we're still figuring shit out every single fucking week. Constantly. But we definitely eventually got to a place where we were confident enough. Even though sometimes I'm still like, when people ask me to film stuff, I'm like, I don't know if I know how to do this. And then I'm like,
you always got to act like you do and try. And
oh, yeah. I'll never reveal. Well, I guess I just revealed it. But my like inner voice is just like, are you sure you know how to do this?
Fall forward always.
Yeah, of course. It's just like, well, not gonna
falling backwards.
You're not gonna get paid saying no.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
That's just for
words
everything.
To live by, yeah.
Prostitution, drug dealing, working a regular job. Yep. Those are just three examples.
Making new friends.
I've done two of those examples. It's up for you to decide which of the two that I have done. But eventually, while we were doing Bro House, you got to work. You got hit up for Shazam 2.
We were writing Bro House for like 6 months or so, and then it all had to get made because we were either going to make it or not because I got Shazam 2. It was like, I'm going to Atlanta for 4 months, and if we want to make this, we have to make it right now. So I like quit my job at Fairfax. Like I quit my job.
Yeah. Bar, oh, right. You were working at Fairfax.
Yeah.
I said Fairfax. Yeah. Not in this country.
I literally, it was honestly such like an empowering moment to like quit my job because I was going to make my own thing and then go make someone else's thing. But I was just PAing in Atlanta, but that was like, talk about a learning experience.
Yeah, for sure. Like, cause that was your first, that's a major.
Yeah.
So that was your first...
about as major as...
Major, and you were there full run of show.
Yeah,
so what was that like,
days.
Moving down to Atlanta for 72 days, working on a DC EU?
DC, yeah, that was DCMU. The EU.
No, DC
EU. Yeah, DC EU. EU. Not European Union, but...
DC
extended
Comics,
universe.
Extended Universe.
That was incredible.
Shazam 2, Fury of the Gods,
by the way.
Shazam
2, Fury of the Gods. Met some incredible people. Only like two stinkers on that whole thing. There was a crew of like 200 people and there were two that were real stinky butts, but everyone else was like so sweet and helpful. And I had a real like passion to learn new things. Like, so, you know, early on, the second Colin, shout out Colin, who just is all like, he's always been in my corner since meeting this guy. And he was like, early on, like first couple weeks, he was like, every day I want you to come to me at the end of the day and tell me one thing you learned. And so I had to like put more effort into seeking out those things. I'd consider Colin a lifelong friend probably. Mm. I mean, it's only been a few years, but I could see that happening for just forever. And Keegan, another turning on a light.
Man, it's getting dark as fuck in here.
It is night light, natural light. Keegan, also lifelong friend. Like, we were crying on the last day when we realized we weren't going to see each other again. Like, it was real. Come on, dude. Special.
You didn't
bond,
cry when
like,
I left, when you
it's
left.
It's like, no, I cried a lot leaving. I cry a lot. I cried coming home on this trip when I walked in the house and all the dogs were there and I was sick and I couldn't hear from the plane because I was congested. And then when you go down, I am fine going up with the pressure.
Going down is crazy.
Going down, I don't know why, since I've been a kid, like, it really fucks up my eardrum.
I just don't like the idea on a plane of, like, during takeoff and descending.
Yeah.
Don't move. Like, just strap in. It's like, ah, oh, but I gotta go to the bathroom right now.
Of course, always. Yeah. No, totally. But, yeah. Atlanta? Is that where we're at?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I guess, because you came back gleeful as fuck.
I did not want to. I was offered towards the end a video assist gig making like 40 an hour, but I'd have to stay in Atlanta. And like, more than the resume or the networking, all that bullshit, the real reason I went, me personally was so excited to go there and do that for 3 months, was so I can learn new things about the making of films, filmmaking, as they say, and come back and apply it.
Yeah.
So I turned down that job, which I still think about almost on the daily. Like, why did I do that? I was like 19, offered like $30-$40 an hour. Like, do it, dummy. But you'd be sitting in a chair, not, you know, pressing R when the director says action or whatever. I was just like, no. Deaver, though. Shout out Deaver. And yeah, came back. And I spent all my remaining Shazam money on a Blackmagic Pocket 6K that we still, I mean, talk about makes an investment that makes its money back. Like, little did I know we'd run our business around that camera.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
And now Mustang is
not
alone. We made
the Rabbit.
Yeah, well, that was, that's true. We did
the
Rabbit.
First thing we made.
While you were doing that, myself, Spencer, rest of the team were finishing up Bro House, and then I got my first like film job on a Hallmark movie, Redemption in Cherry Springs, starring I don't remember any of their fucking names. It was a good experience for sure. And same, it was just like, okay, what could I apply to our stuff?
Yeah,
I did. And I mean, I met my girlfriend on that job too, so that was definitely a good summer for sure. Yeah, so that summer for sure, because I didn't know anything about. The only side of like filmmaking or just media in general that I knew, other than like GoPro, and I mean, because I had experience with like filming skating and all that types of stuff, but and
totally
acting,
different world.
It's a completely different world. But I'd always only I thought I understood being on camera. Then very recently, I just learned, oh my God, I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. But the experience for sure, the summer of 2021 goes like still to this day. I'm like, oh yeah, that was because I had worked like two jobs back to back that summer while you were in Atlanta. Then we came back to the Rabbit. You and I worked on a Hallmark movie together, but then you quit,
I quit
after like
mid job.
Yeah, I wanted to quit so bad.
That was like the beginning mid job, but it's a Hallmark.
Yeah,
that it was not that it was every set
it was
in
way
their
too
own way is
insane.
Poorly run, but
was
that was like
way too insane.
They were literally putting people's lives in danger, and I was walking around. I'll tell you the exact moment that I knew that I was going to quit. I was background PA. I lost.
What's a background PA? So, explain for those of you who don't know.
Background PA is basically the babysitter for all the background actors. You get them checked in. You make sure they're on set when they need to be on set. You make sure they're fed, paid appropriately, leave when they're supposed to leave because you can't give them overtime most of the time. They're usually locals. They're usually all like struggling, excited, enthusiastic actors. There's one kid, and then who we let leave early. She pumpkin, which is when kids can work less at labor law, child labor laws. It's a whole thing. There were like 9 adults from Albany, because for some reason they used Albany background, and it was the middle of the night in the city of Newburgh. I was
fresh after a blizzard.
Fresh after a blizzard. I just came back from Albany. We all came back from Albany.
That was a fucking crazy weekend. I was
slipping and falling on the sidewalks of Downing Park, middle of the hood, fucking trying not to fall on my ass, looking for adults because they didn't, where parking was on the map was not where parking actually was, and they didn't give me anyone to catch. They didn't give me a people mover. It was all self-motivated, and I was walking around literally like screaming for adults, just yelling the names of the background actors. Yeah. No one, I was getting yelled at by she who must not be named. And I, like, in the middle of doing my job, Downing Park, freezing cold, dying, just called my mom and was like, I'm gonna quit. I was like, I'm gonna quit.
Yeah, I remember after that day specifically, you were not the only person that had quit. I didn't want to quit. The crew. I didn't. I don't. No, more than that. Like, the day three, because that was day four.
That was, yeah, like day four. I think. Yeah, because we did three days in Albany.
The next day, there was three PAs.
Yeah.
And that was fucking insane for me because I didn't quit, which was, I'm glad I didn't, because I do want to see things through to the end always. And at the time, I generally thought, you know, like, this will pay off. The people will see me working really hard and this pay off. Mm, it didn't because it didn't. They never fucking called me.
I karmically lost an amazing opportunity because I quit that job. So it all evens out in the end.
And I never received an opportunity from these people that I worked for since. But yeah, that job was fucking insane. Nightmare. Because the next day there was three PAs and I was like the only one that had PA experience. Yeah.
I learned what a shit show was.
And I was like, damn, this fucking sucks. And that made me never want to PA again. And I have since not.
Yeah, because bringing it back to Atlanta, like, all-star crew, all-star cast, all-star everything. Like I said, there were two poopers. One has since retired from film totally. The other one, I'm sure, is ADing now. Mm. And everyone was just like, it was the having a, you know, American Stratocaster as the guitar you learn on. It was driving a BMW as your first car, which I had the Honda first.
Yeah.
And I have a Honda now. Mm-hmm. And they're both gray. And it was the best experience, PA experience, and it was also, like, for that reason, probably not the best, like, intro to that. But I literally, like, went from tippity top to, like, they had to clear out room on the floor to stick it as far on the bottom as it can deserves. Like, it was so bad. That was such a nightmare experience. I hope no one has to go through that. Yeah, I was gonna get blamed for someone's frostbite even though they were asking me to get them out of the tent. That was so stupid.
Yeah, I got frostbite from yeah, we will. I got frostbite from that weekend on my toe.
Jeez,
that was my own damn fault. But
people went to the hospital and stuff. Yeah. That was a nightmare. That was crazy.
Well, what's crazy too is it's like a lot of people think exactly, Jake.
Exactly.
There's just like so much people don't think about when they watch it. The funny thing to me too is like at moments on certain jobs, I'm like, yo, why am I busting? Why am I sprinting down a street to make sure somebody has their coffee before they go and say one line and then get brought back to the trailer?
We're just making movies, folks.
We're just making movies, but then it's just like, yo, I'm literally like out of breath hustling down this fucking street. It's cold as fuck. Why am I working for somebody else as hard?
Yeah. Well, I feel like me and you have a work ethic that most, like, honestly.
My work ethic definitely varies. There's days where I'm like, I don't want to do anything.
Part of what COVID did was destroy people socially, like in terms of like social ability, and destroy people's work ethic.
Yeah,
like all you have to do to be like an all-star employee is like do your job, and like people are like, wow, you really are good.
You
at
are
this.
Now it's one of my insane. Elite employees.
It's so insane.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good,
it's fucking
video.
Crazy. But then fast forward, now let's jump into, because 2022 was like our first year of you know,
legitimacy.
Yeah, we opened up for business.
Yeah,
LLC, all that stuff, all new territory. Get an office. Shout out to Dave DeLeo and Eric and David at Grit Works.
Great people.
Come visit us. Don't visit us.
Don't. We're
but
busy.
Send us an email first.
I won't be there.
And then we go to we don't have to talk about it too much now because it's not out yet. But 2023 was the year of the feature film.
Yes, The Option.
During the worst time to shoot a film.
Yeah, so we basically were a day away from shooting when the SAG strike started. Mm-hmm. WGA was already in full swing, but we were unaffected. We were on like a SAG micro budget contract, which cleared us. But yeah, we were literally like gearing up to shoot this feature film that like I wrote during a weird time about personal things. And then you guys, I told you about it. I was like, should I write this? You were like, yes. I wrote it in like a couple weeks. And then pre-production, I went on family vacation and come back. And we're a week away from shooting. Writer strike's going on, unaffected. And then our number one, our lead SAG actor. Mm. So he was like...
Connor Bond from episode two.
Yeah, from episode two. One, a great episode. But yeah, he... We were all scared, like, are we allowed to do this? Mm. Who the fuck are we? But are we allowed to do this? We ended up doing it. So eternally grateful to, like, the entire crew and cast for what we were able to do. And it, we're going to watch it soon, you guys. I realized last night there's a movie that exists that's not finished, but let's say there's a movie that exists that I'm the only person in the world to have seen.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels like a pretty exclusive club to be in. It's pretty cool. I know some underground shit. I know some underground shit none of y'all know about. Yeah, right?
Yeah. Makes a movie, gatekeeps it. Gatekeeps it. I don't really feel like showing it to you.
I made it for my... When I put making it for yourself.
Spent thousands of dollars and hired people to just gatekeep it. Yeah, no, that was definitely... Last year was a huge... year for all of us, I think, for you especially, directing and writing. And then you were
because then I moved to LA like 2 weeks after we finished or something like that.
So we don't have to, again, to, when the movie's out, obviously we'll dive more into, like, I don't want to spoil anything because it's not out yet, but what was that experience like for you going from not being a writer and director of a feature film to writing and directing a feature film to then doing that feature film?
Right.
I could have just said, what was that experience like for you?
It was incredible. It was everything I'd ever wanted to do, and it was a nightmare in the best possible way. It was not a lot of sleep, trying so hard, fear of failing you guys and everyone around me that I love, and I just loved it. It's crazy because I watched it in its entirety, the first rough cut, for the first time. I've been cutting it since I got to LA. That's been like the thing keeping me going through the strike, because of course I moved to LA in the middle of both strikes, so no work.
Nice.
And so yeah, that's been keeping me going. And you know, we got this apartment. Me and my roommate slash brother got an apartment in Hollywood, and I was able to sit in one of those like fake Eames chairs in our living room at night with the glow of the neon signs coming in through the fucking window, and watch our movie that we all made together for the first time. And it's crazy because it's incredibly dark, and I kept thinking about how anytime we weren't actively rolling and they were actively acting and I was actively directing, we were just laughing and having so much fun.
Yeah, it's funny too, because even before, when we were having pre-production meetings, we were like, we need to make sure everybody's comfortable with the subject matter.
Not a problem
and
at all.
Not even once. Like, at certain points, I forgot, like, oh yeah, this is a scene where it's like, oh, well, let's talk about, I think you should,
like,
leave.
Multiple out-of-body experiences making that. Like,
the feature for me was like a huge proof. Like, I felt like myself, I had a lot to prove to myself. Right. Because I had always just banked and relied on, like, oh yeah, Miles will take care of that for me. I just have this idea, let's do it. But now the roles had been reversed.
Yeah, and I told you from the beginning, you and the rest of the guys, but like, you know, you, like, I don't have the bandwidth to do anything but direct, so I really need you guys to step up in a way that I've just never expected you guys to. Not that you couldn't or didn't want to or anything, but like, I wouldn't have been able to do what I did and accomplish what I accomplished if it wasn't for you guys really stepping up and giving it your absolute all. Spencer, Michael, you, Quinn, Kara, everyone was just like dream crew member, dream person to like, it was amazing. That was such a crazy experience.
It felt
experience.
Like summer camp. It felt like going.
Which is what Atlanta felt like.
Yeah.
Which is what those 3 days in Albany felt like before I quit. Like, a lot of filmmaking like is a lot of like production is summer camp.
Yeah.
It's just making friends and struggling together.
And then maybe seeing them again.
Yeah.
Well, that's just the whole thing. Well, back to our feature specifically, something I realized after the fact was like, oh, I have a lot more potential than I thought I did, not only as like a creative, but also as filling a leadership role.
Yeah.
Was there anything that you felt that coming out of the feature that you learned about yourself or proved yourself wrong? Like, oh, I couldn't do that. Yeah. Okay.
I need people in my corner.
Mm.
You need like, it felt like at the same time as like
fucking chair, sorry.
Such a crazy communal experience. Mm. It also was like a very isolating individual experience.
Yeah.
I learned to let go of certain things. I learned to not let go of certain things.
Mm.
I've learned everyone's ego isn't even worth the conversation because your existence is based off your ego. And I don't mean that with the subtext that word has. I mean that the definition, like, ego is the you, you know. So that was big. And like a lot of things related to trust and every weekend that we had, it wasn't actually a weekend, but like we shot over the weekend. So
yeah.
My weekend was like Wednesday and Thursday or something.
Tuesday
and Wednesday. And every weekend I was, absorbing art. I was going to a friend's show or a show in the city or to see like Barbie and Oppenheimer. Was like, I think our first or
summer.
Second weekend.
Yeah.
And like we did Barbenheimer. It was so good.
I didn't do Barbenheimer.
Oh, you didn't.
I did Oppen Camp.
Oh yeah.
Cause Oppenheimer theater
didn't
camp.
Did you drive separately to Barbenheimer?
We didn't go see Barbie.
I feel like
I didn't go with you guys.
Spencer,
I went, I didn't go out of solidarity for not wanting to participate in Barbenheimer. But
it was awesome.
Yeah.
You need art. Art is, I think, have my love and appreciation for art, the making and the consuming, is why I'm comfortable using the word artist to bring it full circle. Like,
gotcha.
I need other people's art in my life as much as I need my art in my life, if that makes
sense. Yeah, I mean, because if you even look around this room we're in right now, wall to wall, art.
Yeah.
All, and even... You know, we used...
In good art.
When your room... before you had, like, redesigned your room, the old Miles' room, we even used things to make our own thing. All inanimate objects.
Yep.
So that, too.
Surge. We
like,
did Surge. We haven't really talked about that.
Yeah, yeah. That was on our Instagram. Very slow. That was a project I was just like, this seems like a silly idea.
Uphill battle for sure.
But yeah, for sure. I think all of us came out on the other end of the feature film. And
we all came out better people.
We didn't
think.
Fucking go to war, obviously, in Iraq or anything.
Yeah, but no, that was
first,
going to war.
Yeah, like, for us as a group, it was. And again, we're talking about this, just sharing our experience so that if anybody else is preparing to do something similar to us, here's some things you might hear and expect. That is all we are trying to...
Film production is both at the same time going to war and just making a movie.
Yeah.
And somehow in every individual's head, in order for it to work, every single individual human working on that thing needs to both put their everything into it and remember, this is just a job. This is just a project, just a movie. No one's dying. Everything will be okay. This is not the end of the world. And at the same time, this is my everything, and I can't live without it. And it's a contradiction, but it works.
Yeah.
When, well, it works.
It goes, this was something we learned. I always love talking about what I learned in acting class. Hampton Fluker is my acting teacher.
Shout out Hampton.
And Spencer's and Kara's and Connor. Well, Connor takes a class, but Connor's like already, I guess, yeah, that's his acting teacher. Connor's an actor. We're,
he was my, our actor. He was my actor.
Anyway, he was talking about buying in, you know what I mean? And that's a,
totally,
pretty much what I'm going to try to explain it as best as I can. Obviously I won't be able to explain it as best as he could. But it's like, if you're a sports fan, right, and you're watching the Super Bowl. Let's say you're a 49ers fan.
Okay, I'm not. But,
and it's Super Bowl. The Super Bowl happened already. But you buy in that for this moment in time, that your team winning the Super Bowl is everything to you.
Yeah.
You believe in your hardest of heart. It is such an intense moment for you that if they lose, you might die or the world might end, because you are so committed and so in to being a part of this thing that isn't you. And then once it's done, your life goes back to pretty much being the exact same.
Yeah.
With either, obviously art is a tiny bit of an exception because it could lead to up, it could lead to down. But the biggest thing I think is if you can start a project and finish it, you're on the right track. So whatever you come out with on the other side, good or bad, positive experience, negative experience, because there definitely was like moments where everybody was pissed at somebody.
Yeah.
And for myself, I'd always kind of recently thought about this. Recently.
Fucking yeah. No, nailed it.
Words. Of just like, a lot of these issues and a lot of these things that transpired in the past and like stuff during the feature, like I definitely could have done more on to prevent it or to mitigate it, whatever. And it was stuff like the feature that makes you realize that it's like, oh yeah, I could have done this better. I could have done that better. And I'm especially nervous now because watching the actual movie, because I was the DP.
Yeah.
Which doesn't stand for double penetration, all you sick fucks out there.
Unless you want it to.
Unless you want it to. Director, photographer, cinematographer, whatever. Cinematographer.
Yeah, DOP if you want to make it
DOP on this movie. So every single frame, every image you see is solely my responsibility. Yeah,
there was one I think I shot that you were busy terrifying for.
When the fucking basement boiler.
Yeah.
That was.
But you did great. So much fucking, I was actually most, not like to put this on you, but I was like, one of the things I was most afraid of was the cinematography, and it left me so pleasantly surprised throughout the whole thing.
That's good.
And the writing, because that,
I'm excited to see
that
what it
experience
like
of writing a thing, having people perform words that came from your brainage is like so terrifying and heart-wrenching. And that, I'm going to cut mad fucking lines that I was just like, you said this already in the last line, or that didn't come out good or corny or anything like that. Yeah. Like, there's going to be a lot. It's right now, it's an hour 48 minutes. I'm trying to cut it down because it's such a heavy story. I want people to have to be in it for as little as possible. Like, I want to get it cut down to like hour 20,
13 seconds.
Like 15.
Do you think, as a challenge to yourself, when the movie's done, could you re-edit the movie into 2 minutes?
I know exactly how I would do that, I think.
My next question for you, and this kind of correlates, the starving art. I got to have your mom on. Maybe the last 30
minutes. Dude, you have to. She wants to be on.
I'm here. I will literally record back to back.
Yeah, maybe you
should,
actually.
I honestly don't care.
She would be an amazing episode. She's the most incredible lady with like
the craziest
story.
What I always, it was crazy to me because, again, back to like,
we owe her everything too.
We really do. We have a good list of people that we owe.
We have a good list. The special thanks in the feature is going to be like most of the credits.
It's going to be half of the movie.
Yeah.
That's the 48 minutes.
Yeah, that's what I'm... Yeah, exactly.
What I was going to say is, like, your mom Adam, who's your mom's boyfriend, and Bobby, your father, always were like, yeah, man, fuck yeah, go for it. Like,
very supportive.
We were family. Like, we would be in and out of their house here constantly doing all types of shit. When we came time to do Bro House, Mr. and Mrs. Conti, we were like, yeah, go for it. Just don't fucking touch the cuckoo clocks or I'll kill you.
Yeah, they really didn't want us to fuck with the cuckoo
and
clocks.
And even like,
I put something in.
Even like Stephen, Stephen and Naomi, like, yeah, go for it. Like, yeah. I always appreciate
every house.
Or even Michael's mom just like making us a whole fucking like arrangement of food the one time we shot at her house.
Yeah, it was really good.
She was like, yeah, I made like all this food. And we were like,
we ate it.
What I, a lot, and of course too, my mom. I mean, my mom. We used my house for skate fellows, but
yeah.
Not only did we have a good group of guys to start this with, and we're not like, you know, anti women or anything. We're just dudes.
Women don't like us.
They don't. I think. Just our girlfriends do, but we can't be like.
I don't have a girlfriend though, so.
So ladies, if you're
find me in LA.
If you're in the LA area,
yeah.
If any women live in Los Angeles,
one queen sleeps in it, and that's me.
Mm-hmm.
I did. I have a queen bed, no bed frame. Don't ask.
No bed frame.
Not getting one.
You have a box spring?
No.
Is it on the floor?
I have a queen mattress on the floor.
Are you fucking kidding me?
A desk in the corner and a guitar in the other.
You should get like egg crates or something. Don't
egg
leave
crates.
It.
Like, I'm going to get it off the floor eventually.
Get it off the floor, brother.
First, so, okay, so let me set a scene. Carpet on my floor. It's like that, like, it's like maybe quarter inch thick, like fuzzy. It's nice. It's like classic, like apartment carpeting.
Yeah.
Queen size IKEA mattress, about an inch and a quarter thick. Next thing I'm going to get for it is going to be, I'm going to get a topper before I go build down. So I'm going to build up and then I'm going to build down. Then I'll probably get a bed frame or have my dad make one or.
Yeah. I was going to say Bobby flex one up.
Wood's expensive right now. Wood expensive right now. So like he was going to build us a console for our TV.
Mm-hmm.
And then we looked on Amazon and there was one for like $115 and it was like really cool and modular. And he was like, the materials would cost more than that. So it's hard right now being a woodworker, I think, but he's doing
it. It's hard across the board, man. Yeah. The economy's so fucked up.
Dude,
but what I was going to
tell me about it.
Yeah. We don't have to get into it. Yeah, everybody knows.
It's not, we should get Michael on to talk about the economy.
Talk about finance.
Yeah.
What I was going to finish my point was, is like, not only we, for all the, you know, we're all friends that started a business together and then you learn like, don't, you know, sometimes, sometimes like friends don't gel as best as they could.
Yeah.
We've all had our fucking issues with each other, except for Michael. Michael's always been really
perfect.
Good at dodging it pisses me off so much. He's so neutral that it bothers me.
Yeah.
But, we also had, all of us had, you know, the family support to help us out too.
Yeah.
So right from the jump, in which we are very fortunate and thankful for. And unfortunately, not everybody gets that. So I always wish people and always try to offer that. Like, yo, let me help you out, you know, when and where I can. Because our external support that we had from the jump, we still have to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And the enthusiasm from family members and friends that just can like continues to keep growing is that's what it's all about. So shout out to everybody who I'm talking about.
Yeah,
you know
thank
you,
guys. You're the best.
You know who you are.
I wish I could name every person.
I can. I'm not going to. Moving on. You're going back to LA soon. You got a couple more days here in New York. I'm glad. I'm sure you were very happy to come home, feel a little bit grounded, but you're probably itching to get back already.
Yeah, seriously.
What are you looking forward to achieving? And you're now we're approaching the spring and the summer.
Oh, it's gonna be so nice.
What are you trying to take back with you to LA?
The notes and experience of you guys watching the feature is one thing for sure. I've shown a couple people, meaning two, a few of the songs that I've made demos of, and I kind of think I'm going to go back and record all of them and then the good ones, like maybe put out into like a thing.
Nice.
But I don't know if I'd tell anyone or even post on Instagram, which is like how people like announce like babies and projects and everything.
Yeah, Instagram is just free advertising.
It's advertising yourself now.
Yeah.
I wrote that script that I sent you, that short, and I really want to make that. I want to get it down to like probably under 10 pages, under 10 minutes, but I am too precious and I'm really happy with some of it. I don't know. I was talking to my friend Elon, who I've made a couple music videos
with.
Yeah,
I was going to say, talk about a little bit on that. You've been doing a few music videos out there.
Yeah.
LA.
So, yo, it's crazy, actually. So, we shot around L.A. On Sunset, but the main location for one of the music videos we made was the Fox Theater and the Bruin Theater in Westwood. These two iconic LA movie theaters that in Westwood, which is essentially UCLA campus. They're right next to each other. And it was the artist plays two characters and they have a dance battle. It's so goofy and awesome. But we shoot there in November.
Mm-hmm.
With James and Liam from New Zealand. So Elon, who's been your replacement essentially. Mm-hmm. He's my boy and we're homies as fuck, but we're also work partner thing. We're kind of getting that going. We shot this movie theaters outside, no permission, but we did it. And then a couple weeks ago, I see on the LA Times Instagram, cause they're just promoting themselves too. Basically every director in Hollywood except for Quentin Tarantino, who already owns his own movie theaters. Mm. The New Beverly, awesome place, and the Vista, awesome place, and now he has Pam's Coffee, a coffee shop. Not that Quentin Tarantino needs my promotion, but he's just doing really cool things.
Well, he's underground, he's definitely,
he's
up
super
under.
I don't know if you've heard of him. Made this thing, it was Plurp Fiction or something.
Feet
like
Fiction.
That Feet Fiction, yeah, he really likes feet, this guy. It's super underground. But I think his success with his movie theaters plus this the Fox, one of the two going out of business, and a lot of the directors who grew up there have a special bond to it or whatever. 20 or 30 fucking Hollywood big shot directors all came together to buy one of the movie theaters.
Damn.
That we shot at. The other one was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and stuff, big boy. But yeah, so I guess we shot at this movie, Nolan and Guillermo del Toro and Seth Rogen and Bradley Cooper, who I'm not going to talk about. And all sorts of literally, you wouldn't believe this list. Look it up. The directors who bought the Westwood Fox. So cool. But that's going to be out probably in April, that video.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows when they're going to open up that movie theater as their own. I don't know. I'm not involved. They didn't ask me if I wanted to buy in.
Yeah, they didn't put you. They didn't
I don't know
offer
what
it to you.
Deal is.
They're you can buy the icy machine for $7,500. That's what's up.
Yeah, I have the ATM outside.
Yeah, who really knows what the fuck? We chose to get in the film industry at the worst possible time, during the pandemic and then during a strike and during another strike.
We have
strike,
really great.
And now
bad
potentially
timing.
Another strike, which is just
not
so fun and great. And I love it so much. But also, too, I'm very fortunate that sometimes it doesn't affect me because we do a lot of stuff for social media and for, non-film related things.
Yeah.
So,
Film Vertical and shit, hit us up.
Yeah, hit us up. We got all types of stuff that we can do for you. Yeah, chief. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so now, final question as we wind down here. What are your hopes for 2024? It's the year of the dragon. We're in March right now. We're 3 months into the year. Me personally, not having a good time, but
yeah.
I know things will pick up at some point. Please, they have to. Miles?
First, I will say, as far as 2024 goes, I am having an amazing time and I'm struggling and suffering immensely, but I'm loving all of it. My goals or whatever, aspirations, finish the feature. Work on the LA roots. I'm there for a reason and remember that, but also enjoy myself.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the beach more. I've been going to the beach a lot. Just it's such a great place to reset.
Mm.
And you're just having a shit day and you're just fuck it, I'm just gonna drive to the beach, and when I get back I'll be doing better. And you always are. Weird things happen there. Ride the wave, just let shit happen. Don't take anything too seriously, but don't undersell yourself, myself. Make friends. Talk to more girls, but also talk to more guys. Or anything in between.
Talk to everybody. I mean,
talk to everybody is like a big one. And see music and art, more art. We were on such a good art and music kick in the beginning of moving there, and then I just got too serious and was working. And go to Harvest Moon in North Hollywood if you're ever out there, and I might make you a drink. Coffee drink. I don't bartend, barista. Yeah.
That's the diner you work at?
Yeah, yeah. It's like a breakfast spot, breakfast lunch spot. It's not really a diner, but
a little cafe situation. Little
yeah, exactly. It's gotcha. Yeah, just like live to the fullest. Don't be too concerned about wasting time, and you'll waste less time. You know, like I feel like I spend so much time just like, oh, I gotta do the absolute most with it. It's like, there's nothing wrong with like sitting down to watch a movie, or like going for a walk, or like noodling on the guitar, or calling up a friend and talking to them and
jerking off.
That's a time, not a time waster. It's a time sucker, if you know what I mean. but yeah, like just
hell yeah,
just keep going, and like, you know, tell your mom you love her, and like just crush, man. Everyone is trying their absolute best, and have empathy for them is big. That's a big one.
I had empathy for somebody recently, and it completely fucking backfired.
Yeah, well, that guy's a fucking asshole. Yeah. I can't believe that that happened. Like,
so, leaving LA after having, although like New York is definitely much a film and media center, but we're outside the city, and everybody's like the Hudson Valley, Hollywood, and da da da.
Yeah.
What was it like leaving behind? You know, yeah, we had some roots, some whatever, but Michael, me, Spencer, all everything that we had together, you know, you were kind of going out on your own for the first time in, you know, quite the best and worst city to do it, because everybody goes there
everybody goes there.
So what was that like for you transitioning from being a fish in one pond to being a fish in Los Angeles?
Yeah. In Newburgh, you have a very small, lovely circle, and it's like we were all super close, and I'm still close with all you guys, totally, but like this was, I felt like I had run my course being here. Part of why I was moving, because it's like, where else do you go but LA? But it was also like, I just felt like I had no more to give Newburgh. Newburgh had no more to give me. The only reason I would stay is my friends and family. Like, that was what kept me going through since coming back from COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Getting to LA was such a roller coaster of, like, you know, you go out and you meet crazy people, and, like, you're brushing shoulders with like your heroes, and then you're also like with like starfuckers, and like, you know, meeting like-minded people was like really awesome. Like, I got really lucky meeting Elon and Zach and like that whole crew of boys so early on, but it was kind of an anomaly. Like, I was like we went to Katie, my stepsister's birthday party out there. She was living in Culver City, and we like met this group of dudes, Elon, Zach, David, Noah, all of them. And we were like, oh my God, making friends in LA is going to be so easy. It wasn't. Like, it was just them. We got so lucky. Like, a bunch of dudes that like think like us and like shit like us and are nice like us. And then like, other than them, it's been quite a challenge.
Yeah.
LA is a really challenging place. Mm. It takes like, people say, I mean, I've been saying yes to everything. If I'm invited to something, say yes.
Yeah.
Like, I went to this Christmas party, like a friend of a friend's cousin's Christmas party, and she was the only person I knew there, and I met her once at another thing.
Mm-hmm.
And people were like, yeah, like, I just got here, Like, I've been here 2 years, and me having been there like 3-4 months, I was like, yeah, I got here yesterday.
I just got here. Suitcases in hand.
We drove, and with that visit, the Grand Canyon. If you ever get the opportunity, I cried. Life changing moment.
Nice.
Seeing the Grand Canyon. But yeah, it was great, and it was horrible. I like challenging myself, so in that level, like, it was the best thing I could possibly do. And you really can't fart without an industry person smelling it. Like, it is. Okay. The shock of, like, and working, like, at a restaurant and, like,
yeah,
the amount of conversations about the producer and stunt people and everyone's so filmy and, oh, I definitely think you would be great for this part, and seeing scripts on everyone's computer is, like, something kind of, like, sad about it for me, where it's, like, oh, boy, I'm, like, just one in a trillion or whatever, but like not in a good way, but but also in a good way. Like, it's just been an absolute roller coaster. I feel like I'm falling apart into a new person, and it's not bad or good, it just is.
Well, you gotta see what the tricky thing with that is. Like, you kind of do have to see where it ends and takes you. It's like, still,
well, it
too
doesn't
early
end.
It's still, well, it doesn't end it,
but yeah, see where it takes it, you
see where it takes you, I guess, the chapters of the experience. Because you know, obviously, leaving, you left home, moved to the other side, even though you were born there and you've already lived there before, but you and your brother trekking out there on your dolo, I know your mom was, like, super fucking sad.
And we
have
family out there, too. Yeah. Like, we're incredibly lucky to, like, be able to move the way we did, like, stay with family until we can afford to get a place that's cool. But, yeah, like, it's tough out there, and it's isolating because you need a car. So, like, it's kind of really easy to meet people in the city, but, like, I haven't lived there, so I can't speak on, like, how easy it is to, like, build, like, strong friendships there, but, like, I mean, Elon, like, if I need something, I have a friend that I can go to, like, and that's really important. Like,
I think because it's, like, with LA, with New York, there's so many fucking people, and everybody, especially a competitive city like LA, New York, everybody has barriers, everybody has walls.
Right.
I realized recently up here, living up here, like I've lived anywhere else, I'm a fucking joke.
Albany.
The amount of people that I've known for a long time and never talked to because of the walls and because of the preconceived notions about people, and then you talk to them afterwards, and it's like, oh, okay. And now because I've talked to them, now this door has opened up.
Yeah,
it's
totally.
Like, oh, I get
Everyone's
it now.
Everyone's experiencing.
Yeah,
together.
It's it definitely has been. I mean, for us especially, I'm not gonna speak on like Michael and Spencer's behalf, but as you know, going from a quad to a trio, really more of a duo because Michael is full time and has another job. It definitely took. It was like a good. It was a good and a bad thing because then, you know, myself and Spencer had to kind of rebuild and reconnect like our working relationship, our friendship, and just establish.
Grew a lot, both of you.
Yeah, for sure. I believe we did. And you definitely grown as an individual. Definitely not physically. You're still exactly
the
same size.
Still a little
skinny boy. But,
No, I think.
Yeah, because there was like a lot of like, what is going to happen when everybody, you know, when you move, when Michael
goes.
It was
a really good thing for you guys as far as growth as people, but also as filmmakers.
Yeah. Even though we haven't made anything since.
Yeah, someone
like
tried to. It's really tough having nothing out from the last like 2 years as far as like.
2022
films and stuff.
Well, we have the pickle I have to finish.
You got
to
get that out there because that that was so cute and fun.
Yeah,
wrote that. Didn't
well,
use
just
the
right now. Like, I just don't have the time to do my own project.
We're running a business,
but I will in the spring and in the summer. I know I will. I just right now I'm in the. I need to recover financially before I start thinking of what the next thing is. And right now, at least, I'm sometimes getting work. So. That's that.
Yeah.
Really.
But, we're always like regrouping and reevaluating and changing things. Like,
and that's always something
super
that
fluid.
I think a lot of people, if anybody experiences similar, could relate to. And that's why I talk about these things. But about, like, you know, especially running a business and it's both running a business and being artists together.
At the same
time. We are filmmakers, but we do feel more like a band.
I know, right?
Like, we feel kind of just like a group, but we're doing, you know, kind of all the same thing, filling all these different roles and whatever. But, cause yeah, you know, if we were having the same conversation about this now a year ago, my outlook and my perception was vastly different.
Yeah.
You know, I was like very much like everything's going to end, everything, the world's going to fucking collapse. But then, I'm still here, still kicking. We're all still doing our thing. And, I know deep down it might be delusion, but we're all going to be fine one day. We have to be.
There is beauty in the negative space, in art, and that's because that's where you are. That's where you put yourself. You know, like, you are where, the work isn't, like, spatially, you listen to a song, and there's a pause in between, like, the lyrics or the music or whatever, mm-hmm. and, like, that is where you can insert yourself and your perception of the art changes the meaning of it. I can't have art without the audience, but the audience is whoever finds it. And so make things for yourself, because that's how people will connect to it.
Thank you very much, Rick Rubin, for that. And you're needed. For that insightful tidbit there. Maybe that'll stay in. I don't know.
It felt worth saying in case it wanted to stay in. And that's the thing. The act of creating things, like, you can't make a thing without the experience of making the thing. And that experience informs how the thing will end up. Making art is a really complicated human experience.
Yeah.
And, like, part of... to talk on Rick Rubin, like, part of being an artist is living as an artist, and you have to see the world in a different way than people who aren't artists and just exist within it. You have to, you know, observe and take different things away, and it's a really fun lifestyle, but it also is really painful, so you're not alone in it. You know, there's a million artists, and some of them aren't very good, but that doesn't matter because it's subjective. So maybe they are good, just not to me. I love it. This has been so much fun.
Hell yeah.
And the squeaky chair is like...
We'll figure it out. We should mic him up next time. All right, so that's going to close out today's episode. This has all been the title of the podcast, by the way.
Whoa!
Make sure to like and subscribe and leave a review if you haven't already on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. We will soon be a video podcast as well. We are currently working that out, and we will be available on YouTube, both as a visual medium with cameras and a studio. But that's, you know, just we're going to get there in a couple of weeks. But anybody that stayed to the end, thank you for listening. We'll see you on the next one. Miles, thank you for coming on.
Just got a haircut.
What?
What? I said just got a haircut. Yeah. Oh, my God. Thanks for having me, Mike.
Yeah.
Bye.